last things I like to do before I get up to speak, and this is only the second time I've ever spoken at a convention, although I have spoken in meetings, is get on my knees and pray, and that's one of the things that I did before I got up here. And I just asked God to do the talking, and I'll just move my lips. So hopefully sometime soon, he'll start talking and you'll get a good message. You know, one of the things I was listening to when this meeting first started is 27 years. Unbelievable. You know, 18 years, that's great. A couple of people with 13 years, that's like Narcotics Anonymous is growing. You know, it proves to me that Narcotics Anonymous is what it is and it's supposed to be the way it is. You know, and people stopped going elsewhere when they got some time, and they stayed here, and that's why Narcotics Anonymous is growing like it is. And but more than 28 years and 18 years and 13 years was one day and 2 days and 4 days and 7 days. And that's the miracle of Narcotics Anonymous. That really is the miracle of Narcotics Anonymous. I haven't been nervous till now, and that's the truth. I think about like my using, and I could tell you stories. I could tell you war stories. Boy, do I got war stories. But you don't need to hear war stories. You lived it, otherwise you wouldn't be in this room tonight. And I can tell you some of the good times, and I think there was one or two when I first started. But you don't need to know about them also, because otherwise you wouldn't be in this room either. But what I do like to do when I speak is talk about what's happened to me since about a week before I found Narcotics Anonymous to what's going on with me today. And for me, that's the steps, the 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous. And that's what I'd like to share a little bit about. About a week before I got clean, I was in one of those states, and I don't have to really explain it deeply because I'm sure, once again, if you weren't there, you wouldn't be here tonight, where I was hopeless and helpless, penniless and jobless, and I had nothing left, nowhere to turn to, no one to turn to, nowhere to go. And I worked out this deal, and it was going to make me back all of that money. And I ended up with no dope and no money. A week later, and I tried to kill myself, and it was in New York at the time, and I ran out in front of, it was the middle of the winter, and it was ice on the ground, and I ran out into the middle of the street in Jackson Heights where I was living, and I jumped out in front of a mineral water truck, and I closed my eyes and turned around and prayed that he would hit me, and I heard a crash, a screech and a crash. But I didn't feel any pain. And I said, wow, this dying thing really isn't so bad. And I started to, like, check myself. And then I opened my eyes. And he had skidded on a patch of ice and hit a parked car on the other side of the street. And he got out of the truck and started screaming and yelling at me. And again, the miracle started working from that point on. Because there was, like, I couldn't live and I couldn't die. Something had to change in this addict's life. And for some reason, my sister happened to be in that neighborhood, and she picked me up and took me out to my parents' house. They had moved to Long Island, and my brother told me about this program that he had been to for a couple of months called Narcotics Anonymous. And he put me on a plane and sent me back to where I had just moved to in Miami. And I got down to Miami, and he told me to call Narcotics Anonymous. And, you know, I had thought, and I don't know what the hell I was thinking. But when I got there, I thought that if I called up the operator and said, can I have the number to Narcotics Anonymous, there'd be cops at my door. So I looked through the phone book, and I saw a number for Narcotics Anonymous. And I called up. And a lady answered the phone, and she said, somebody will call me right back if I give them my name and my number. So I made up a name, and I gave them my number. And sure enough, a guy called me back a couple of minutes later, and I'll never forget what he said to me. He said, I'm an addict, my name is Cliff, and you're in luck. There's a meeting right down the block from you in an hour, and I can meet you there. And he did, and I went. And by the grace of God, I've been clean since that day. that was like the first time I felt that like I really was in luck, that like things had started to change. This guy called me back just like this lady said. He met me at the meeting. And I can't tell you a whole lot about that first meeting. I really can't. I have no idea what went on for like the first 3 weeks, except that I shook and I sweated and I puked. 3 weeks straight. But I do remember people saying, work your steps or die, motherfucker. And I do remember people saying, keep coming back. Those are the two things I remember. Well, I rode up to that first meeting on my motorcycle, and I was wearing my leather jacket, and had my boots on and my jeans and a black T-shirt. My T-shirt's clean today, though. And for Lisa, I want her to know that my hair is down. So if you guys would say, you know, yes or no, my hair is down. Come on, come on, come on. So when she hears this tape, she'll go, okay, thank you. And I went to that meeting, and I got off the motorcycle, and I walked in, and I saw this blonde sitting in the back of the room. And she had a cup of coffee in her hand, and there was a seat next to her. And I walked in, and I sat down, and I took off my jacket, and I put it next to her. And I asked her if I could sit there, and she said yes. And then this guy came in, and he said, you must be Bam Bam. And I said, how did you know? Now, just because everyone else in the room was smiling and talking and laughing, and I was sitting in the back, shaking and sweating and puking, my eyes were sunk back in my head. I weighed about 170 pounds, and today I weigh about 210, so it'll give you a little bit of idea what I looked like. And he came right over to me, and he said, I'm Cliff. And again, I don't remember much, but I remember that the blonde said, here's a meeting list, and tomorrow I'll be at this meeting. And I went. And when I got there, she said, and tomorrow I'll be at this meeting. And I went. Then the body and the mind will follow. And that's basically how my first 3 weeks of Narcotics Anonymous went. But the funny part about it was I stayed clean for 3 weeks. I had never in my life, since I picked up my first drug, done that. But all the time that this was going on, I kept hearing, work your steps or die, motherfucker, and keep coming back. And I remember looking up, and there were two posters on the wall. One had the 12 traditions of Narcotics Anonymous. Now, they never said work the traditions or die, so I said, the hell with them. And the other said the 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous. And I looked at them, and there was only 12 of them. And I figured, well, what the hell, I'll do one a day for the next 2 weeks, take Saturdays off, and I'll be done. And I looked at the first step, and it said, don't do drugs no more, I thought. I said, I'm there. I can move on to two. And then it said something about God, so I could skip that. And the third one said something about God, so I could skip that. And the fourth one said, I gotta do an inventory, and I said, the hell with yous. And the fifth said, share it with somebody, and I knew yous were crazy. Six and seven talked about character defects and shortcomings, and I knew they had the wrong guy there. And then I saw the eighth step where it said, apologize to everybody you hurt, I thought. So I called up my ex's mother. And said, it's me. I got 3 weeks clean. And everything's going to be okay now. And she said, you're an asshole, you always were an asshole, you always will be an asshole, and she hung up on me. I didn't exactly get the response I was looking for. And the
9th looked like it said the same thing, and the 10th said something about, we were talking again, once again, and 11 was God again, and the 12th said something like, now I didn't bother with spiritual awakening, and I didn't bother with principles and all your affairs. All I saw was help another addict. And I was living in Miami, and I was walking down Galloway Road, and I saw this guy walking past this convenience store where I was walking the opposite way, and he was smoking this drug, walking down the street. And I went over to him, and I grabbed the drug out of his mouth, and I told him all about this great program that could help him the way it was helping me. And I didn't exactly get the response I was looking for from him either. And I went back to another meeting the next day, and I heard somebody say, get a sponsor. So I went up to this guy, and I said, would you be my sponsor? And he said, sure. I said, Narcotics Anonymous steps don't work. He said, what do you mean they don't work? And I told him about my experience with the 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous. And he said, the steps are in order for a reason. And I said, well, what reason is that? He said, because when you work them the way you work them, they don't work. I fired him. And I asked another guy to sponsor me. And I told him the same story, and he told me the same answer. So I decided, well, maybe they have something. So this guy told me he wanted me to start working the steps. And he gave me some assignments to work on the steps. And he told me what the first step was all about, and that they're in order, and we're going to work one at a time, 1 through 12. And we're going to work the steps. And he gave me some assignments, and he told me what to do. And at the same time, I started hearing people say, you have to change. You have to change if you want to stay clean. You got to change everything. So I cut my hair, started wearing button-down Oxford shirts and Fiorucci pants and Italian leather loafers, and I was a miserable son of a bitch. My sponsor had me start to work the steps at the same time, and I was miserable the whole time. One of the things he told me is that the first step is in two parts. The first part is the only thing I had to do every single day, and I could stay clean. The second half started me on changing, and that the 11 and a half steps that followed that first half was what was going to change me and keep me clean. But in order to stay clean, just not pick up, all I had to do was the first half of the first step. It's all I had to do. And he told me the best way not to use is don't pick up. What a concept. And all I had to do is not pick up, and I wouldn't use. Admitted that I was powerless over addiction. And he told me what addiction was not just the drugs. The first time I read it, I thought it said drugs. He told me that my addiction was more than the drugs. My addiction was a lot of things that encompassed what made up this addict. Today I can see a lot of those things more clearly. Back then, all I knew was the drugs. But he told me that if I stopped using the drugs, the rest of the stuff would fall into place. And I didn't understand it then. But today I can look back and see what he was talking about. And ever since I stopped doing the drugs, I saw how the addiction manifested itself in my life and how I can do the things to change the addict's behavior. That's all I had to do. He talked about change in the second half of the first step. He told me that my lives became unmanageable. I didn't stop doing drugs, and then all of a sudden life got great. The second half of the first step doesn't say stop doing drugs or admit you're an addict or become powerless over the addiction and your life gets great. Life became unmanageable. And I learned my first lesson about life becoming unmanageable about that time. I had woken up late, the alarm clock didn't go off, and of course the guy who invented the alarm clock was an asshole that morning. And I ran outside, and I jumped on my sled, and I tried to kickstart it, and it wouldn't kickstart, so everybody in Milwaukee was an asshole. And then when I got on the highway on the way to work, everybody that cut me off was an asshole. And because I got to work late, my boss was an asshole. And he told me to go home. And when I got home, my old lady was being an asshole, so I called up my sponsor and I said, you know, everybody is being an asshole. And he told me if I changed my attitude, there'd be one less asshole. And that's where change started for me. I remember finishing up with him with the first step and going on to the second step. I remember when we started talking about the second step, I said, I don't think I can do this. And he said, why not? I said, because it says God. And he says, where does it say God? I said, well, it's sort of implied. And he said, well, is it implied? And I said, well, power greater than ourselves. He says, well, if you don't believe in God, what do you believe in? I said, science. Prove it to me. He says, okay, let's try that. He says, you believe in science? For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction, right? And I said, yeah, absolutely. He said, something knocked you off your feet and brought you to your knees, right? I said, uh-huh. He said, and something has brought you off of your knees, and you're not using drugs anymore. What is that? I don't know. He said, how about a power greater than yourself? How about that? And that's when I started writing some of the assignments that he had given me for the second step. He also told me about sanity and how sanity is repeating the same mistakes over and over again and expecting different results. And it says in the second step that we can be restored us to sanity. It doesn't say that we were necessarily insane, but we could be restored to a place that we were possibly before we picked up. And that was not doing the same things over and over again and expecting different results. That was doing something new, something different, changing. I think about the same time, he asked me how come I was so miserable all the time. And I told him that, you know, I didn't like this change thing. And he says, well, you know, what do you mean by you don't like this change thing? And I said, well, look at me, you know, I don't feel comfortable. You know, I'm driving in a car, I got short hair, I'm wearing like these button-down shirts. He said, well, why are you doing that? And I said, well, because I'm changing. He told me, a change comes from the inside. What do you mean? He says, when you change the outside, nothing changes but the way you look. When you change the inside, then things start to change. So I'm back to wearing t-shirts and jeans, riding my motorcycle, and I started letting my hair grow out. Now, I also got arrested about this same time. Now, it wasn't for anything I did in recovery. It seems that the DEA had been doing this 3-year-long investigation. Now, for the first period of time, my name had been mentioned over and over again by all these different people. For a second little bit of time, I disappeared. But because I was mentioned so many times in this first period of time, they picked me up. And they arrested me in Miami and brought me up to Maryland to face federal charges, a federal grand jury. And about the same time, we were talking about things changing in my life. And my lawyers told me I needed to cut my hair and shave my mustache and put on like some nice clothes and go to court. And it seemed like that was like going on in my life every couple of years. I was cutting my hair and shaving my mustache, putting on clean clothes and going before the judge. Not necessarily that this is one of the best things that has happened to me. It's one of the best things that has happened to me in recovery. But since I've been clean, I've not had to go to court this long. It's amazing what staying clean can do. And all the people that were there with me when I faced this grand jury all had to do time. And for some reason, I got probation. I got a federal probation, but it was still probation. I didn't have to do a single night in jail after I went before the grand jury. And everyone else did. And I know that's got to be another result of working the program. And I don't know why, and I don't know how. And you know, I started working on the third step about that same time. I started, and this power greater than myself thing was okay, but I had this problem with God. I really had this problem with God. Because I was brought up in a Jewish home. And my parents, they weren't really religious, but they liked me to know about the Jewish religion. And so I started getting religious on my own, because when I start something, I like go full blast at it. Not that anybody here can relate to something like that. But I like get full-hearted into doing whatever it is I'm doing. And if I, you know, another thing about me is though, then if I can't do it really good, then I don't do it all. You know, like I can't play tennis, so I won't even pick up a racket. But like, there are other things that I can do really well, so that's what I focus on. Somebody says, you want to play tennis? Nah, I don't do that. That's not what I do. But there are other things that I like to do. And this is one of those things that, like, I got really Jewish. And I made my mom change over the whole house to, like, you know, the two sets of dishes. And, you know, I started wearing a yarmulke all the time and wearing the tzitzit, for anybody who knows. I mean, this is Utah. What am I even bother talking about Judaism? I don't know. One of the things Lisa told me is that Lisa wanted to come with me here, and that's my girl, and she said something about, you know, while you're there, you know, I don't want you messing with any of the Mormon women. And I said, well, why would I want to mess with the Mormon women? He says, because you can do two at the same time. So I'm not doing two Mormon women while I'm here. So you guys don't need to hear about the Judaism, though. But it was a part of my life, you know. So I started getting, like, full blessed into this stuff, you know. And that's like, so what happened was, like, I got turned off by the Jewish part of it, too. Because, like, God always seemed to be like this fire and brimstone kind of God. The God that always, like, hurt you and punished you. And the God who, like... You're like, it was like a gotcha God. You know, you do something wrong and your mom says, you do this again and God's gonna get you. And you do it again, you fall down a flight of stairs and she says, see, God gotcha. So I didn't want to have anything to do with this God thing. So when I got turned off to the Jewish religion, I also got like turned off to God, period. So when my sponsor started telling me that about the third step, we started working it, it's like God was like really a tough thing for me to like really get into. I didn't want to do it, you know. It was like one of those things like tennis. I just didn't want to do it. And then he asked me to read it, and I read it. And he asked me to read it again, and I read it again. And he asked me to read it again, and I read it again. And then I saw something that I hadn't seen before that. And I see it all of the time now. There were four words at the end of the third step. They're also repeated one other time in the steps. And those four words are written differently than any other words in any of the steps. Both times they're written. If all the steps are written in bold print, those four words are always written in italics. And if all the other words are written in italics, these four words are always written in bold print. As we understood him. To me, that meant because they were different, they had to be a little bit more important. And so I took a look at those four words and tried to figure out what they meant as we understood him. But what to me it started to mean was that it didn't have to be the God of my misunderstanding. It didn't have to be that gotcha God. It didn't have to be the God of my upbringing. It didn't have to be the God of my rabbi or anybody else who wanted to throw God down my throat. Hi, Utah. It was a God as we understood him. So I was living with this girl at the time. The girl who sat in the back of the room was with the blonde hair. And I said to her, what's the difference between God's will and my will? And she said, anything that you want to do without consulting somebody else first is your will. Anything I want you to do is God's will. But she also told me that if my God hadn't been working, that I could try using hers. So I said, explain what your God is. And she said, loving, caring, and greater than yourself. And that's what I've been using ever since. And the only thing I do now is I add some other things, like a sense of humor and some other things to get me over those pitfalls. And, you know, I don't even think of them as like hurdles anymore. It's like, you know, God doesn't throw roadblocks in my path. He gives me things to work out. And it always seems that the things he gives me to work out, he's got a real good sense of humor about. Now, I don't always think it's funny at the time, but he's got a sense of humor. So loving, caring, and greater than myself is the only things that I do use on a regular basis, and that's one of the only things that I took out of that relationship that was worth its weight. But I've been using it ever since. And then, what a concept, I found it was written in the basic text. As we understood and became real important, I took a little bit of what you believed in, a little bit of what you believed in, a little bit of what you believed in, and I put it all together. And as we understood, it meant that there was no religious affiliation with God. When I walk into a room of Narcotics Anonymous, it doesn't matter what religion. All that matters is that we all understand that there's a power greater than ourselves. And today, most of us call him God. I call him regularly. But most of us call him God. And then I started learning about the fourth step. We started working a fourth step. Now, if other addicts are like me, I think that when you start working your fourth step for the first time, you should be locked up in a closet until you're done. Because what I did the first time I worked my fourth step was not fearless, searching, or moral. What I did when I first started working my fourth step was think about everything I ever did wrong to anybody I ever did wrong to, and instead of writing it, I kept it inside of me, and I walked around with all that anger all of the time. And somebody told me, all you have to do is write it. When you're doing a fourth step, you don't think it, you don't read it, you don't say it, you write it. That's how you get a fourth step done. But I didn't feel like writing at the time. They're just like nothing was coming out. I was angry and I didn't feel like writing. And they said, all you got to do is pray that it goes from here to here to here and then onto the paper. And once it gets on the paper, it doesn't come back. So I tried that. And I started writing, and I wrote, and I wrote, and I wrote, and I wrote. And I don't know exactly how long it took, or how many days, or how many pages in my notebook it took, but I started to write. And my sponsor started giving me some suggestions on how to do it. And the things that he told me to do is he told me to leave a space after each incident, blah, blah, blah. You ask your sponsors how to do a fourth step. I'm not going to tell you. Ask your sponsors. That's what they're for. Sponsor is a guide through the 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous. If you don't have one, get one. And when you get a sponsor, say to him, do you work the 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous? And if he says yes, say, and do you do it with a sponsor who works the 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous? And then you can say, would you be my sponsor? And I did that. And I asked him how he worked his steps. And he showed me, and he told me how to do my fourth step. And he told me to leave a line between each one. And he told me when I got done writing it to go back through it and write whether I thought it was a sin, a virtue, or the instinctive behavior of an addict in addiction. And I went back through it, and I wrote whether I thought it was a sin, which most of them were, a virtue, which sometimes I thought they were, but I couldn't understand the instinctive behavior of an addict in addiction. But when I got done writing, it felt like there was a weight lifted off of my shoulders. I just felt so much better about me. And I made an appointment to speak to my sponsor and do a fifth step with him. About the same time that I got clean, this other guy in the program, Jeff, got clean. And Jeff and me got clean. He got clean a little bit before me. But Jeff was like one of those sick mothers like I was. And he was like wild and off the wall. And he did all those same crazy things. And, you know, I always had this little thing with Jeff because he had also asked RT to be his sponsor also. So we both had the same sponsor. We both clean about the same time. We both working the same, you know, the steps about the same time. And I was starting to feel a little bit insecure about this guy, Jeff, being around all the time. So when I called up my sponsor, I said, did Jeff already make an appointment for his fifth step? And he said, yeah, we did it already yesterday. And I said, oh, man. So So I went to speak to my sponsor, and I did my fifth step with my sponsor. And while we were there, I said, after I finished my fifth step, I said, "But I got a question. I got a question for you." I said, "I got to know, is Jeff better than me or worse than me?" And he said, "The only difference between you and Jeff is he did it with a goat and you did it with a sheep." Nah, I'm kidding. The sheep backed up into me, I swear. A good sheep will do that. Nah. But what he was telling me was that we're all the same in here. That's what he was trying to tell me, that there's not any differences. That what's the difference between the goat and the sheep? What's the difference between how many different ways I can prostitute myself when I'm using? That most of the things in my fifth step, most of the things that I've written down in my fourth step, was the instinctive behavior of an addict in addiction. That there's nobody in here that's worse or better. That we are all the same. We're all the same. Nobody's better, nobody's worse. So it doesn't matter what your religious background is. It doesn't matter what your sexual orientation is. It doesn't matter who you did, what you did, when you did it. We're all the same when we come into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. And that was like a great education for me at that time. It was just unbelievable what you can learn in just like doing a fifth step. And all of a sudden, I was no longer angry all of the time. I still get angry once in a while, but I was no longer angry all of the time. I was no longer walking around like screaming in people's faces all of the time. I was no longer pushing people out of my way to get a cup of coffee at a meeting. Things had changed a little bit for me. Only once in a while I pushed them out. I just pushed them in the grocery stores. I was talking to Kim about this yesterday. We were talking about the different ways that people do sixth and seventh steps, fifth steps, fourth steps. One of the things that my sponsor did, and she said she had never heard of somebody told her this almost the same way a couple of days earlier than that. And one of the ways that my sponsor did was he had this like list of character defects and shortcomings. And when I was doing my fifth step, he was like checking off where I fit. And Kim and I were talking about that because she had said that she never heard of somebody writing down your character defects when you know, you're going over your fifth step with them, so they can tell you, here, this is what you need to work on, you know, these are your character defects. Well, my sponsor had this list and he started to check things, but before I even got halfway through with it, he like crumpled it up and tossed it. It's like, yeah, you already covered them, now we'll go on to something else. But he gave me assignments for my sixth and seventh steps. And some of the things that he had me doing were things that I had no idea what they meant at the time. Things that I had no idea how they could help me. Once again, I had no idea how that could benefit me. He told me to be honestly nice to somebody that I honestly disliked. And there was this one guy that used to come to meetings all the time. He used to say, "I'm definitely an addict and I'm definitely Dave." And I honestly disliked this guy. But one day he came in with this really nice pair of sunglasses. I said, "You got a nice pair of sunglasses." And he said, "Thank you." And I walked away. And my sponsor told me to say something honestly nice to somebody that I honestly disliked every day for a week. So for 7 straight days, I saw this guy in meetings with the same pair of sunglasses. And for 7 straight days, I went up to him and said, "You have a really nice pair of sunglasses." He said, "Thank you," and I walked away. At the end of the seven days, I stopped saying it. I have no idea what he was thinking after that. But I went back to my sponsor and I said, "I'm done." And he said, "What did you learn?" I said, "That David's got a really nice pair of sunglasses." Okay, what did I learn? I learned that you can find something that you honestly like about everybody, no matter how much you honestly dislike them. Because when I come into rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, sometimes I hear these same whiny people whining about the same whiny stuff over and over again every single time I hear them in a meeting. And sometimes I just want to go, "Shut the hell up." And sometimes I want to go leave the room and come back when they're done. And sometimes I don't even want to go to that meeting anymore because I know that person's going to be there. But nobody is going to keep me out of a room of Narcotics Anonymous. If you don't know it by now, you will by the time I'm done, but I earned my seat here. I belong right here. And nobody's going to keep me from these rooms. But I also learned that I don't have to listen to the messenger all of the time. That I can listen to the message that messenger has. That there are, if I honestly look hard enough, I can honestly find something that I honestly like, no matter how much I honestly dislike this person. And if I close my eyes, I could be in Ogden, Utah, or I could be in Miami, Florida, or I can be in Jackson Heights, New York. If I close my eyes, it's always the same people that are in these rooms, and these people are sharing recovery. It might be what they almost went out over, or it might be what they learned by staying clean. But I don't have to look at the messenger. There's always a message, no matter how much I hate their whining. And I can do that today when I go into meetings, and I never get up and leave anymore just because I don't like the person who happens to be sharing. And that's one of the hardest things I ever have to learn. And I didn't do it right after my first six steps. Don't get me wrong there. It took me a long time, but it took me that lesson to start getting into that thing. One of the other things he had me do in Miami, I was living in Miami, and they have toll roads in Miami. I don't know if you got them here. They don't have them in North Carolina. They got toll roads. You go down like 836, you got to throw a quarter in a basket. You go down like the turnpike, you got to throw like $2 in a basket. Well, I rode a motorcycle. You don't actually need to go by the basket. So for a lot of years, I never put anything into the toll machines. And as long as you don't hit that little piece of metal that's sitting in front of you, they're never going to catch you. And I did this for a lot of years. When my sponsor told me from now on, do something nice for somebody else without letting them know why you're doing it. So instead of skipping the barrier, I would pull up and I'd say to the lady, this is for me. And this is for the car behind me. And then I'd go without leaving any reason or explanation. But then what I started to do is I started looking for cars that had girls driving with guys sitting next to them. And I would pull the scooter up in front of them and I'd say, this is for me and this is for the car behind me. And I'd pull away slowly. So I could watch the girl say here, and the lady say no, he paid for you, and watch the boyfriend go, where the hell do you know him from? I thought I was having fun. But because of that, I also learned something about when I started doing my 8-step. And another thing I started doing, he started telling me like I should start doing volunteer work. And I didn't understand why, so I went to the hospital and I started doing like some volunteer work. And he told me like I should like go by people's houses and when like you saw the old lady like and she's got like leaves and branches and stuff in front of her house, move it. You know, it doesn't take anything from me, and it makes things a lot nicer for her. And like if I walk down the street and there's a meter and the guy's time is expired, throw a dime in it. What does it cost me? You know, all those times that I beat the Department of the, you know, the transportation, and I beat the, you know, motor vehicles, and I beat the insurance companies, and, you know, all these other things that I did. But I didn't know it was like, you know, but I said, well, all right, a dime, it's quarter, who cares? You know, like, what, you know, who cares? I'm clean now, you know, I'm clean. Like, this is amazing. This is amazing. So I started doing things like that. And then when I started working on my 8-step, I thought, again, I said, well, you know, what is, I already tried this. It's like not really too cool, you know. It really, no, you know. And he says, well, it has nothing to do with saying you're sorry. First of all, the 8-step says doesn't do amends. This says to make a list. He wants me to make 4 lists. He wanted me to make first a list of the people that I had harmed physically. Then he wanted me to make a list of the people that I had harmed emotionally. Then he wanted me to make a list of the people that I had harmed financially. And then he wanted me to make a list of all the people that I had thought harmed me. Fourth one was fun. Well, I made this list of people that harmed me emotionally, and we went over it together. And he told me that most of the people that I had written down, ex-wives and ex-girlfriends, the best thing I could do for them is never talk to them again. Don't open up the old wounds. That's for me. Your sponsor might tell you something entirely different. My sponsor told me, don't go there. For my parents, the best thing I could do is not use. No need to try to say I'm sorry, because they don't want to hear that shit no more. How many times did I say, I'm sorry, I'll never do it again, and do it again? And say, I'm sorry, I'll never do it again, and do it again. And say, I'm sorry, I'll never do it again, and do it again. Finally, they said, the hell with you. We know you're not going to do it again, because we ain't going to give it to you this time. So they don't want to hear I'm sorry. I didn't know that I'm sorry has nothing to do with my eighth step. But he told me that the best thing I could do is stay clean. If I stayed clean, it would show them that I'll never do it again. And the only thing that he could tell me about that is that time takes time. There is nothing that can substitute for time. Time takes time. Now, with 9 months or a year and a half, I didn't understand all this stuff. For 2 years, I didn't see how my parents would ever love me again. It wasn't until my sister got married that my father actually handed me a key to the house and said, go ahead over there and I'll meet you there later. My father handing me the key to his house on Long Island? That didn't happen for a lot of years clean, regardless of a lot of years using. So I didn't understand all this stuff, but he said to me, just stay clean. He told me that how come I didn't have my name on the list of people that I hurt emotionally. I said, well, I don't count. He says, you count more than anybody. Put your name at the top of the list and stop beating yourself so much. For the list of people I harmed financially, when I got clean, I owed people in the area of $32,000. And that doesn't include drug debts. He told me, throw them out. There's no sense in going to a whorehouse and ordering a ham sandwich. There's no reason to go. She's got a confused look on her face. You don't go to the drug dealer and say, here's the money I owe you. Okay? Those are places I don't need to be today. I don't go back there. I don't have to prove to anybody that I'm clean. I don't have to prove to anybody that here's the money I borrowed or stole or took or you fronted me. There's no reason for me to be there. I don't owe those drug debts. Now, notwithstanding the drug debts, I owed somewhere in the area of $32,000, and most of it was to the IRS. Well, see, when I got arrested, it's amazing that they taxed my drugs. They taxed all of those years that I wasn't reporting income. And they took a guess, and what was I going to do? Say, no, it wasn't that many kilos?
Whatever you say, so that's what I did. Now, the IRS happens to be like one of the best people to have to owe money to, because they'll take it in payments. Spread it out over 8 years. I know I did. And then finally, after 8 years, I no longer owed them any money. And this year, I expect a tax return. And since I've paid them off, I've gotten a tax return every year. First year was like $57, but it was better than paying them for 8 years. And then like now, I think like if I started off when I was clean with like a $32,000 debt, I think now to like I'm down to like $3,200. I still owe people money. There's still a couple of credit cards out there that I still have to clean up. And there's still some other things, you know, like I need to take care of on the side, you know, that like I just need to do. My brother laid out money for me to get a lawyer. My cousin laid out money for me to get a lawyer. These people are pretty important. If it wasn't for them, I'd be in jail. If it wasn't for these people, I would be in jail. If it wasn't for God, I'd be in jail. But these people are lent me money, so I'm going to get it back to them. Even if it has to be 15, 20 years late, I'm going to get it back to them. That's something that I need to do for me. And the people that I harmed physically, he told me, there's no way I could go back to Arizona and tell this guy, Terry, I'm sorry I broke his kneecaps with a baseball bat. It ain't going to work. So that's why I was doing volunteer work at the hospital. What a concept. things that he told me to do before I knew why, things that I started doing without understanding why, things that I was learning without having any possible idea of where they would come in, were starting to fall into place. And all because I started working the steps of Narcotics Anonymous. All because I stayed clean a couple of days in a row. All because of the people that I see on a regular basis coming back to meetings and are still here. Same people that are here when I got clean are still here today. They're not having to have to go anywhere else to find anything else. If I wanted to go somewhere else, I shouldn't probably get into this stuff, but I'm going to. If I wanted to go somewhere else, I would stay there. That's for me. If I needed to get it somewhere else, I probably wouldn't need to get it here. The screws never helped. The turnkeys never helped. The psychiatric social workers never helped. My mom never got me clean. My girlfriends and my wives never got me clean. Narcotics Anonymous got me clean. This is why I keep coming back. I love this program. And I keep coming back. This is what works for me. If something else works, that's fine. But if I'm going to go somewhere else, I don't think I need to tell my psychiatric social worker how my NA meeting went today. There's nothing that I could share about my NA meeting that's going to help my psychiatric social worker. So I don't go, first of all, but if I did go, I wouldn't have to share about it. So when I hear somebody else coming into my meetings, share about recovery from the disease of addiction through the 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous. Thank you very much. That's what I come here to hear. I come here to hear a message of recovery from Narcotics Anonymous and the 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous, from the disease of addiction. That's why I come here. If I wanted to hear about some other shit, I would go there. I don't want to. That's why I came here. And please, even if you don't care about the traditions, or you don't care about me, or you don't care about your mother, care about the newcomer who you're confusing the hell out of. Our first tradition tells us about unity. It tells us that all of our last names are the same. That name is addict. That's what our first tradition talks about. Now, I could hate your guts, but when a newcomer walks into the room and you and me are the only ones in that room, we're going to sit down, we're going to talk about recovery, we'll take him to the coffee shop, he can sleep on our couch, we'll babysit him until he can stay clean again one more day, or until he can do it on his own without us being there. That's what unity is about, because we both have the same last name, and that last name is addict. No other last name. And another real important thing about the first tradition for me is that when I say that I'm an addict, and you say that you're an addict, and you tell me how you stayed clean today, I can say I'm just like you, and I can stay clean today too. If you tell me you're anything but, I have an excuse not to try to stay clean that way. If I tell you that I'm anything but, then maybe it won't work for me because I'm not the same as you. But if you're an addict and you told me how you stayed clean today and I'm an addict, I can believe that it can work for me. And all I got to say is look at this street junkie biker who's clean over 11 years. And that's because my last name is Addict. That's all it's because. Now, everyone calls me Bam Bam. That's what I've been called for so long. Sometimes I forget what my real name is. But everyone knows me as Bam Bam. That's who I am. I'm Bam Bam. But it doesn't mean, because you could call yourself anything you want to call yourself as long as your last name is Addict. Call yourself Joe. Call yourself Sue. The idea is that you have a first name so that somebody doesn't have to say, hey, that guy. So I have a name, and that name happens to be Bam Bam. That's the name that I use. That's what everyone knows me as. I'm not hiding from anything. I'm not hiding from anything. I no longer have to look over my shoulders. I'm a locksmith by trade these days. By trade. I get paid to open cars and houses. The best part of it is that when I'm opening up a house, I don't have to look over my shoulder to see who's coming down the street. Yeah. That's what it's about for me today. Is that I don't have to look over my shoulder. Nobody's hunting me down. Nobody's looking for me. Nobody's trying to get me anymore. Now, the bad side is I've lost that edge. But maybe that's not the bad side. You know, it's like when I walk into a place or walk in somewhere or I'm around a bunch of people, I can't smell the dope anymore. But maybe that's not so bad. And I don't know who's carrying it. I don't know who's packing anymore. I remember when I first started hugging people, I think Kim remembers this, So I hugged people. I used to check to see if they were packing. That's the only reason I hugged the person in a meeting. I don't do that anymore. I don't have to check to see if the girls are wearing bras, and I have to check to see if the guys are packing pieces. I don't have to do that anymore. Nobody's looking for me. Nobody's out to get me. Nobody wants me. I don't have to look over my shoulder anymore. My last name is Addict. I am like so glad to be in a room of Narcotics Anonymous with a bunch of recovering people. I love this program. This is what does it for me. The fourth list that I wrote, the people that I thought owed me an amends, I showed it to my sponsor. I said, okay, I did the other three. I at least started on them. The way I was supposed to do, you gave me assignments. I'm working on it. Now how do I get even with these people? And he took the paper, he crumpled it up, he threw it in the garbage can, and he said, now you're even. I said, wait a second. You said I could write this list. He said, yeah, and you did. He said, but don't they owe me an amends? He said, why? Are they working the program? Well, they should be, but that's besides the point. If this program was for people who needed it, there wouldn't be empty seats here. This program is for people who want it. I want it. I want it bad. So that fourth list stayed in the garbage can. I don't know how I feel if I ever ran across these people, but I guess I'm not supposed to have to know. It doesn't really matter today. I do know that I feel a lot better about the people that I owe amends to. I've gotten from 32 grand down to 3,200. I've gotten from my parents not even wanting to see me to inviting me over for the holidays and giving me a key to the house. I've gotten to where my brother loaned me money again to get a lawyer yet. That was like the big thing. I was clean a year and a half, but still, he loaned me money for a lawyer. The two things he was never going to do, loan me money or help bail me out. I love this program. It's all about this program working in my life. The 10th step for me talks about personal inventory. It talks about the maintenance part of my program. The 11th step for me, I'm just skipping over real quick here. The 11th step for me really gives me the prayer that I use on a regular basis. Prayer and meditation were not two things that this religion gone bad, biker trash kid wanted to deal with. But one of the things that I learned about prayer and meditation, and it's funny because prayer for me, it became real easy at that point. Because now I did believe in a God, because it was a God as we understood him. It was obviously a power greater than me. And the 11th step tells me what I can pray about. It says, I pray only for the knowledge of his will for me and the power to carry that out. I pray for his knowledge and the power to carry that out. That's what I pray for on a regular basis. I don't know what it is. I don't know how to do it. But I pray for it, and I'm clean. I pray for it, and my life is getting better. I pray for it, and not only do I get to see my kid every other weekend, not only do I get him for 4 weeks during the summer and a couple of holidays, now my girl's got a daughter, and she's with us all of the time now. I have, like, people in my life that, like, I'm responsible for. So I know that part of that's got to be knowledge of his will and power to carry that out. I don't know. But today I don't have to. I just don't have to. I'm not that goddamn important. Today I just do what I'm supposed to be doing. And one of the things I try to do is be the best me that I can be today. I'm the best me that I can be. Sometimes that falls short. I'm never going to be Saint Bam Bam. Sometimes I do things that aren't so nice, but one of the things that my sponsor told me is if you never want to have to tell that person you're sorry, don't hurt them today. It's a lot easier. My 9 steps have been a whole lot easier since he told me that. So I don't do things purposely. Sometimes it happens and I have to. And that's what one of the things that the 10th step tells me is that when I'm wrong, I can admit it today. There used to be the time where, like, if I was wrong, it wasn't really wrong, you would just sort of right. Sort of. No, Now, if I'm wrong, I could probably admit it, and then when I get back to the ninth step, I can do an amends with you. One of the nice things about working the 12th step today is that it does have that first part about the spiritual awakening. It does have the last part about all of my affairs. It also tells me about helping another addict and how I can do that. The 12th step, for me, is the second promise that Narcotics Anonymous makes. I truly believe, for me, that there are only two promises that Narcotics Anonymous makes. Page 102 of the Basic Text, 5th edition. Promise from freedom addiction, freedom from active addiction, the solution that eluded us for so long. And the second promise, to me, is the first part of the 12th step. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. It's sort of telling me that if I'm ready to work my 12th, it promises me that I've had a spiritual awakening out of the other 11. I truly believe that when I started working a 12th step and started doing 12th step calls and started working with the helpline and the H&I subcommittee and working on public information, that I have had that spiritual awakening. Narcotics Anonymous has not failed to provide me with the two things that it promised me it would do for me. I love this program. When I do 12-step calls, once again, it doesn't matter about race, creed, religion, lack of religion, social, economic standing, political belief. And proof of this is one of the first times I had to do a 12-step call after I moved to North Carolina. I am a New York street junkie biker Jew. Living in North Carolina. And I got a call to help a guy. I was supposed to do a 12-step call, pick him up and bring him to a meeting. And I never do 12-step calls by myself. So I called this guy up, and he wasn't home. So I called up this other guy, and he wasn't home. And I went down my list of people in the program that could help me do a 12-step call, and I got to this other guy. And I said to him, can you do a 12-step call with me? And he said, sure, meet me at such and such a place. And I went over there to pick this guy up to go do a 12-step call for somebody else. Well, when I got there, here was this black militant who swore that if he ever shook a white man's hand, he'd have to cut it off. Cut off his own. And here he was getting into the car with this biker Jew from New York. And the best part was we went to do a 12-step call on this redneck hillbilly. Never before had I ever thought that three such people could be in the same room and all three live to tell about it. And the guy's clean today. And that's not even the important part, because for me, doing a 12-step call just means that I'm clean today. I did a 12-step call and I left there clean. That's what the 12-step call is all about for me today. The 12-step also tells me about working these principles in all of my affairs. I take this stuff, and when I leave this room, I can take some of that stuff with me out there. I don't have to preach the gospel. I don't have to make this guy stop using and join my way of life. I don't have to do any of those things today. What I do today is take it into my affairs. I am a better me today. I can live with me today. I can do the things for me that make me a better person, and wow, it seems that other people like me better and there are a whole lot less assholes. It's amazing what this program can do for me. I have no idea what time we started or what time I'm supposed to end. I got like no idea. But like, you know, there is some things that I wanted to talk about, and like I didn't even like... I was thinking about the traditions, you know, and I started to touch on some of the traditions, and there are a few traditions that, like, really mean a lot to me. The third tradition means a lot to me. The third tradition, but that's, like, sort of what I've been talking about here. It doesn't really matter. All you need is a desire to stop using. Not the honest desire. Not a desire to stop using certain things and not other things. Desire to stop using. Have the desire to stop. I have the desire to stop, but I'm still loaded. You can still come to my meeting. I'd ask you not to share, until after the meeting with other people, but please come to my meeting. And I'll go with you to the coffee shop. And I'll sit with you overnight if I have to. But please come to my meeting. The desire to stop using is all that's important for me. I guess, you know, it's getting late, people are leaving, so I will talk a little bit about the 12th tradition also, for me. Again, this is only for me. The 12th tradition, in the 12th tradition, and I don't want to get this wrong, so I got the little white book here. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. And I hear people say a lot of times in meetings, like at the end of the meeting, they go, what's the 12th tradition? Oh, I'll just do the short version. Fuck it. Or I'll just do the short version. What you see here, who you hear here, let it stay here when you leave here. That's not what the 12th tradition says. What's said in meetings stays in meetings. If I could not take from meeting to meeting some of the things that I've heard in a meeting, I'd have nothing to say to you tonight. But I've heard it in meetings, and it stays in meetings. And that's why anonymity is important in my life. I don't have to say, Kim told me, I heard, and bring it outside these rooms. It's not about that. What it's about is that I heard a person share in a meeting today something that helped me to stay clean one more day. And I think that you could use what I heard. So I'm going to relate it to you. I'm going to tell you what I did. I'm going to tell you how I did it. This is what I did. And it worked for me. I think it might work for you too. Try it. My last name is Addict. So is yours. Keep coming back. I love this program. The last thing I did before I got up here to share is get on my knees and pray. When I got up here, I was nervous and there were butterflies in my stomach. Those butterflies are gone, so I must be done. Thank you very much for listening.